Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind the beauty of life. But when my mom said again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my D&P right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him. Little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training and difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I'll blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals. I build with dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish gills, the cops, none. The time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and office scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holsters. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. Black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case. But the wish at the police, look at the name Lake. Go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey Newton.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force. Of what we fight for, my heart goes to you beautiful wife in war.
Enlist and more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule is strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. The struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. my arms.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free the land. Real the sin and greed. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Dumont Shakir, where our goal is a fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transfer the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, producing new African citizens. Before I bring on a guest tonight, I'd like to go over a couple of events that happened in the week during this week in history. On Sunday, the 20th, Charles W. Chestnut, novel born in 1858. In 1926, Mordecai W. Johnson became the first black president of Howard University. In 1943, 34 were killed and more than 5 injured in Detroit race riot. Federal troops called off. The Congress of Racial Equality Corps Civil Rights Organization founded in 1943. 1960, Floyd Patterson knocked out Ingemar Johansson in the fifth round and became the first person to regain the heavyweight boxing championship. Also, on Sunday, in Canada, they know the National Aboriginal Day. Okay, in 1990, June 20-28, U.S. visitor Nelson Mandela, a free South African activist and a leader of the African National Congress, attracts huge turnouts in New York, Boston, Atlanta, Los Angeles, and other cities, and raised a level of pride and hope in Black America. The South African leader addressed a joint session of Congress on June the 27th. Okay, on the 21st, 1821, the African Message Peace Power Zion, the AMZ Church, formally organized at meeting in New York City. In 1915, U.S. Supreme Court, Queen of the United States, said grandfather clause in the Oklahoma Maryland Constitution violated the 15th Amendment. In 1923, Otto Martin Garvin sentenced to 5 years in prison after his conviction on charges of using the mail to defraud. Garvin said the charges were political. Black people rebelled against racial oppression in Detroit and Harlem, fought and killed by police in 1943. 1945, Colonel Benjamin O. Davis Jr. named commander of Gettysburg Field, Kentucky, and became the first black to head an Army Air Force base in the U.S. On the 22nd, 1868, the Congress readmitted the state of Arkansas on condition that it never changed the Constitution to disenfranchise blacks. 1937, Joe Louis knocked off James E. Bradder in the 8th round of Chicago and became the second black heavyweight boxing champion. In 1949, Isaac Charles defeated Jersey Joe Walcott for the World Heavyweight Championship. In 1966, Jane Meredith addressed the National President Club. In 1970, Richard Nixon signed the bill extending Voting Rights Act of 1965. On today's date, on the 23rd, Wilma Rudolph, won of 3 gold medals in 1960 Rome Olympics, was born in 1940. In 1947, Taft Hartley Act passed, President Truman veto, seeking a shift to the right. Throughout this period, civil rights legislation was blocked by a coalition of Southern Democrats and Conservative Republicans. In 1997, Dr. Betty Shabazz, educator, and widow Malcolm X died from injuries she received in a fire in her New York apartment at the age of 61. Dr. Betty Shabazz was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence of the Provisional Government of Republic of Africa. She also part of the original cabinet at the first vice president. Okay. On the 24th, born in 1874, Arthur R. Schomburg became a historian, writer, and activist, resulting in amassing more than 10,000 documents of black history since enshrined in the world-renowned Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture and New York City public library system, now more than 10 million items. In 1885, Samuel David Ferguson, consecrated bishop of the Protestant Episcopal Church and named Bishop of Liberia, he was the first black American with full membership in the House of Bishops. In 1936, Mary McLeod Bethune, founder president of Bethune-Cookman College, was named the director of Negro Affairs of the National Youth Administration and became the first black woman to receive a major U.S. government appointment. The educator held the post until January 1st, 1944. Okay. In 1949, the Billboard magazine and other white media stated started using the word rhythm and blues instead of the word race record. In 1975, Mozambique, Africa, after 11-year war, gained independence under a revolutionary government. On the 26th, 1859, in San Quentin prison, Francisco Lalao leads mass breakouts caught on Indian prison, 40 escaping, 10 killed. The Black Star Line, the first all-black shipping company, organized by Mark Garvey to link people of color in the world in commercial and industrial enterprises in 1919. 1934, W.E.B. Du Bois resigned from the NAACP in a disagreement over policy and racial strategy. In 1938, James Weldon Johnson died of injury received in an automobile accident near summer home in Wiscasset, Maine. In 1959, Prince Edward County, Virginia, Board of Supervisors abandoned the school system to prevent integration. In 1962, sit-in demonstration and passive resistance move began in Cairo, Illinois. Demonstrators against segregation and swimming pool, skating rink, other facilities continued for several months. In 1975, a shootout occurred at Ogallala between AIM, American Indian Movement members, and the FBI. Okay. There was a couple of events that happened in history, and we almost say free land. Those identified land, revolutionary ingredients, three out of political prisoner war, three out of new African captive citizens, new African field up, and new African prisoner war. And I thank everybody who been following us in 2014, who been joining to the show, joining to the dialogue, asking questions, had statements, spreading information, spreading out links and propagation. And I thank all the students who are enrolled to go out to invest behind enemy lines, who are constantly educating themselves, or whether the enemy is educating themselves on the streets and doing something positive with their education. I'd like to welcome to the show tonight, Dr. Antoinette Harrell. How you doing, good sister?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm well, sister. I'm strong. Pushing forward, you know. First of all, thank you for coming to our broadcast to share your knowledge and understanding. I want to thank you for all the work you're doing in the past, work you're doing in the present, work you're doing in the future. Before we get this off, can you tell little people a little about yourself before we get into the dialogue?
Well, I'm going to keep it brief. I'm a genealogist, local historian, and I research Pinnage cases.
Okay. The first thing I want to ask you, what exactly is a Pinnage case? What exactly is that for the people who don't know?
Pinnage is when someone had to work off a debt on a particular plantation or farm, or in other words, if a person was given seeds or tools to work on a farm and that person was planting the crops, and at the end of the year they was told that they didn't fare out. Well, at the end of the year they couldn't leave the plantation because they was in debt. So that's what pinnage is. When someone has incurred a debt, that alleged debt, and couldn't get out that debt.
Okay. In regards to pinnage, does pinnage still exist today? From your research, I understand this here exists today.
Yeah, that's pinnage. I mean, of course it is. Especially in deep rural areas, when you look at everyday working people is held in pinnage, if you really want to know the truth about it. You know, someone that is working and trying to pay off a debt. In some cases, some people have been arrested because they didn't pay that debt. So I will say yes, it is.
Okay, I appreciate that. I understand that you put a documentary out called The Slave Detective of the South, and you earned the title Slave Detective of the South. How do you earn that title, and what does that mean to you?
Well, of course, you know, when any network is producing a documentary, they come up with their own titles. But I am a person that research modern-day slave practices that took place in the 20th century, especially after slavery was abolished. Most of the cases I have looked at is basically in 1910 to 1973 was the last that was reported and that I found the index on at the National Archives located in Washington, D.C.
That's very interesting. So you're saying this document saying that slavery still was this in 1973. Wow. How did it actually make you feel to know this still was going on in the 20th century?
Well, it hurts. I mean, it's the cases that I have examined, the cases that I analyze, and the people who I talk to mostly. It's a very emotional burden that you carry with you. Sometimes they're sleepless nights. Sometimes pain is real deep. Let me just say it cut through you. You know, you don't see the world the same. You don't see nothing the same. Nothing. You exist to do the work. You exist to free those that are still held in bondage. You exist to educate those who may not even believe that these type of cases exist, but they do. So sometimes I find myself, I live in three time zones. I live in the past, the present, and the future. But it looked like to me I find the past hurts, but I have to go back there, and I'd rather go back there because what I see in the present sometimes is too difficult. You know, people they don't believe it. They try to ignore it, especially people of African descent in this country. How could you doubt it? How could you doubt it? Tell me, how could anyone who have any knowledge of slavery in America doubt that people were still held in that type of bondage? That is far beyond. I mean, I am a descendant of those that was enslaved, so therefore do I think that it can happen again? Yes. Do I think that it ended all when they say ended in 1863 or 65? Absolutely not, and the research has proven that time and time and time again. How much more?
Indeed. That's some very important information, you know, and like you said, a lot of people after the descent are not convinced in regard to certain things because it didn't come from a European thought or it didn't come from the media, it didn't come from that particular thing. And also that just because the 13 men was signed, they feel like everybody is free and liberated, you know, but your research and what it experiment shows otherwise. You know, one thing I want to ask about that in regards to your particular work, right? What kind of treatment have you received from the people, like when you interview them or give them information? What kind of treatment? How did they treat you, you know, as an individual who's doing this work?
Are you speaking about the people who are held in that type of system or the people who, what people are you speaking about?
No. I'm talking about the people that you interview. You interview in regards to your research and the people that you enlighten with your research. How do they treat you?
Well, the people who are enlightened by the research, they appreciate knowing the truth for the most part. For who I'm interviewing, who went through it, they're the ones that, you know, I have to take them back in a time and period that they work hard to forget but can never forget. And so I have to bring them back here. But this time they're taking me with them. and I have to experience that pain with them. I have to be that shoulder to cry on. For the most part, they'll tell you that what I've heard from a lot of the people that I have interviewed that went through that, they said that no one would believe them. And so they kept it to themselves. They internalize it. They live with it, to the fact that sometimes I know it had to create high blood pressure and everything, health issues, because when you have to keep something bottled up inside of you, and if you don't turn to drugs or alcohol or something like that to self-medicate yourself, it comes out one way or the other. So I'd rather be the sounding board for them to at least talk it out. Let's talk about it. And I don't care if you want to call me 2 o'clock in the morning and you want to tell me something. My phone is open. To listen.
True, indeed. That's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. So that you're willing on to talk and aid and assist. You know, I understand you've been doing research in 16 states, right? Besides your parents in Louisiana have you discovered any slavery from 19 to 1973 in other states as well during your research?
Yeah, well, some of the research in the other states, documents that I analyzed, whether those documents be FBI reports or Department of Justice files, NWC files, Attorney General files. But when I analyze those files and I document my notes on those files, that's how I come to the conclusion of the state, because the document was filed with the particular state or the county or parish mentioned in that. But my two focus states that I, three, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. But, of course, there were 16 states. There's no way one person can work 16 states. It's hard to work one state, let alone 16. But I have knowledge of the 16, and I have knowledge of cases that was filed against people who was holding people in that type of, in modern-day slaves. I'm not even going to say modern-day slaves. They're slaves.
Indeed. What we do know is that the 13th Amendment is just a sophisticated way of talking about slavery or identifying individuals as slaves by the abuse and misuse of saying that people are criminal-minded. Without actuality, individual that enslaved us, our ancestors enslaved people, our people should be really considered to be criminal, because they contributed their atrocious and criminal acts by treating them like human chattel slaves, by treating them like animals, you know, so they're actually the criminals. So it'd be interesting how the wordplay game goes along and how people use certain legal statutes to justify certain things and things of that nature, right? You know, it's really interesting. You know, the work that you're doing is very important, very detrimental. And I actually can see that by the work that you're doing, that you're more likely to receive threats, people don't verbally attack you and other aspects. I just can see that without you even saying that, you know, just by understanding, especially in regard to the areas that you're working in. And the thoughts or ideas that come to other people in regards to trying to maintain money and capital by the use of human capital, by the use of humans, right? So it's very interesting in general. And it's good that you came to the broadcast to share your thoughts and ideas and concepts with people, because it's very much needed. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about your about the case you were pushing in regard to reparations. You know, I want to know more about that in regard to reparations. And why do you see reparations is doing fit for us?
Well, certainly I believe that reparations is very important. It's due. Just like generational wealth was passed down from generations to generations, well, poverty was passed down due to the fact that the 400 years of slavery. And once we was emancipated, we wasn't even given a 40 acres and a mule. we had nothing to pull ourselves up by the bootstrap. But let me just say that the first most important thing that I find to be repaired is family. As a genealogist, I can tell you from my studies that many of the newly freed enslaved people walked for miles and miles looking for their wives, their husbands, and their children, who were sold off on those auction blocks, who was given away as gifts. 157 years later, I am still trying to find family members that was enslaved and didn't know where they went. That's the first thing that needs to be repaired, is the family. So that the family, one of the things I do believe as well, that if we're going to talk about reparations, I don't believe that we should have to pay for databases such as Ancestry and any other database that's out there that is holding information that is vital to us finding our family members, researching our family members. We didn't sell ourselves. We didn't separate our families. So why should we have to pay the fundings or the fees to be a member every month to locate our family members? That's the first thing to repair. And as sophisticated as technology is today, if anyone wanted to find out where their ancestors came from on the motherland, we shouldn't have to pay for that. So when we speak about reparations, we have to be very, very clever and wise in what we are demanding, not asking for, but demanding, because it happened to us. We're still damaged as a result of what happened with slavery. Let me point out something. And I like to point things out where people can really see the picture. I am only three generations removed from slavery. My mother's grandfather was enslaved. So that's my mother, that's my grandfather, my mom, and then me. So that really means two generations. It's not even three. Because I make the third generation. So it's my mom and her dad, and his dad was enslaved. If he was only enslaved for 3 years, he still was enslaved when he came into this world. But we know about everybody, most people, they can tell you about Beyonce's children's name, her mother's name, her father's name, and may know the grandparents' name, but don't know anything about your own family. My heroes and sheroes are those who are responsible for me being here today. They're the ones who endured the cotton fields, the beatings, the whippings, the lynchings, and all the things, the worst things that a human being can think of. They survived all that for you. And for us to forget them, and when we think about celebrating Juneteenth, okay, that's Juneteenth, Galveston time. Yes, I understand it. But what about May's time of freedom, 1963? What about Allen Crawford, 1926? What about those other cases I know about, 1921? I could go on and on and on. We'll be celebrating every year, different years and different times, when we really know the truth about it.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I want to ask a question for in regard to reparation. Do you feel that land is a part of reparation as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look, yes, I did a segment and I talked about in 1900 we owned 15.5 million acres of land. To this day, we're less than one point some million acres of land. Yes, land is important. But first of all, once we get the land, I'm going to say this here. Okay, some of that stuff is their fault. But some of it is our fault too. And I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. When we own land, we are not good stewards of it. when someone passes away, we don't open up secessions, and that may be because we don't know what to do with it. We don't know what a succession means. We don't know how to dispose of the property to pass it down to the next generation. Those are the things that we need to educate ourselves on. Most people who have family in their name, land in their family, they couldn't tell you the legal description of the land. They couldn't tell you where the land is located. They couldn't even tell you whose name the land is in. I don't understand that, because the people who purchased that land, most of them in the 1800s, a lot of them couldn't read and write. They made their X. So now, okay, so yeah. We can read and write. So why are we in worse shape now than we was back when Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Rosewood, they was building their own community so much that the dollar, the people on the other side of the track was suffering. They had to destroy those towns. They wasn't seeing anything. They was the ones starving. Not the black folks wasn't starving.
Yep. Interesting.
So we have to do more than just, you know, I was looking at the Juneteenth. So I just happened to glance at it because someone texted me. And I see this young lady on the stage and, you know, she's dancing, her legs cocked up in the air, and she's bending all over and looked like she was getting ready to have sex on the stage. What the hell that have to do with Juneteenth? You see?
Yep.
So why we have to sing everything? Why do we have to dance about everything? Some things are sacred, and some things need to be dealt with in a sacred manner. So when we come together to discuss business matters in the family, we need to say, look, turn off the television, turn off the phones. We got some business to discuss in the family. And make sure we include the youth in it so they, when they become adults, they would know this is what we're supposed to do. This is what I grew up doing. We had family meetings to discuss family matters. So if we got reparations, what would it look like? What would it look like? I'm being honest.
Yeah, that's the question. Yeah, that's the question, you know. You know what I'm saying? From my ideas, you know what I'm saying? It'd be land. It'd be the freedom of all our political prisoners of war, all the captured citizens, and as well as monetary needs. You know, it'd be all of that. And so we can build our own independent
right.
That's the way I look at it, from my perspective, right? You know, that's why I believe in what I profess.
It shouldn't be given back to the Chinaman to buy hair and nails and eyelashes and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's defeating the purpose. I know right in my own family. No, they don't care about their ancestors, but let the money come on the table. Oh, yeah, they don't care about what they went through. Get away from me with that. No.
Yes,
you don't know their name and you want money? You care what they went through? The suffering that they had to go through? Man.
They're quite interesting mind state. You know, I understand that you wrote a couple of books. If a person wanted an interesting book, how could they access your book? What would he find
about it? They could just go to Amazon. It's on Amazon. You know,
okay.
My books was written to educate people. And it's been a journey. And let me just say this to everyone that's listening. When I started this, I was 32 years old, and I'm not ashamed to say I'm 60 years old now, so how much more running y'all think I can do? How much more?
Yeah.
From me right now, because I'm going to tell you what we do as people. They'll wait till I'm dead, and they'll name some streets. They'll name a street after me, and then they'll lift up all that. That stuff doesn't mean anything. Get the knowledge from me while the blood is running warm in my veins. Hear what I have to say.
Yes, ma'am.
Because when I'm at the grave, I can't say no more.
Give your flowers while you're here.
Yeah, I can't say no
more. Give your flowers while you see your present. Yeah.
So if you want to know something, this is the time to ask me right now. Because
you know, I actually seen in one of your books, like
60 years old, I give myself a good 10 more years, and then that's it. Next thing I'll be doing is just talking if I got my right mind to be able to talk. Because the stuff I research is enough to only through the Almighty Heavenly Father that my mind is sane, because the stuff that I read, I can see why people don't want to pick that up. I live, when I go into those areas, I feel like I am in the pits of hell reading this stuff and listening to what people went through and reading all these abuse and murders and, you know, it can do something to a person's mind, but I'm glad I'm a strong person.
True indeed.
Because I'm in the house. I'm in a dark place when I'm doing that research.
Let me ask you a question. You know, you mentioned genealogy, right? What exactly is genealogy for the people who don't know? What exactly is that?
Genealogy is the study of your own family history. Genealogy is learning about yourself, and it's looking at you. And don't ever allow, I want everybody that's listening, please listen to me. Genealogy is not a hobby for anybody whose family members was enslaved in this country. And another thing I want you all to change is saying the slaves. They was enslaved. They was free people, slaves. Let's make the difference there. Because it means that the terminology is very important here. So when you research your family history and you find those that was enslaved, say those that was enslaved, my ancestors who was enslaved. Because I hate when I hear people say the slaves. Just get something.
Yeah, they're real incorrect. Yeah, real incorrect. I understand that. I respect that. You know, in regards to your Zoom session, Nurturing Our Roots, is that a genealogy class? Or what exactly is that session? And how can people get involved in
it? I'm on YouTube every Tuesday night on Nurturing Our Roots at 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock Central Standard Time. And what I do on the Tuesday night show, I really like to educate the everyday people that it is possible for you to research your family history. Unlike some of the other talk shows that may talk about the history, the family history of celebrities, I want the everyday people or the ordinary people with extraordinary family stories. Because once you start researching your family history, you are going to unlock the doors and you're going to find some painful things. You're going to find some things that you can be proud of. You're going to find strength in yourself. And you'll say, oh, you know, this is where I get this from. And then you're going to start to celebrate your own ancestors. You're going to give thanks to them. Then it's going to open up the local history of the area that your family lived in. And you'll find out that most of all the people in a small town are related 3 and 4 times over. So genealogy doesn't just show you something that's sad. There's a lot of joy that comes with it, knowing who you are.
Interesting. I understand that you're developing a TV series, right? What would a TV series be about once you get you developing?
Basically what I do right now, help ordinary people find their family members. That's what it would be about.
Okay. Now, if an individual or organization wanted you to be a speaker, how would they go about doing so? If they wanted you to be a speaker at some kind of event, or they wanted you to participate in some kind of discussion, how would they go about doing so?
They can email me at AntoinetteHorrell@gmail.com. That would be the best way for them to reach me. AntoinetteHorrell@14gmail.com. And they will put all their information, their contact information, and I will get back with them. Most of, due to COVID, I'm still doing a lot of Zoom speaking engagements through Zoom. And that works out just fine because it really, you know, you can share documents, you can show photographs, you know, and you can reach people from all over the world without having to leave their homes.
I looked at the documentary, and you were interviewing a brother. And the brother you were talking to, he seemed to be like he was kind of afraid to talk to you, or he was intimidated, or he was holding back on certain things, right? You know. I just wonder exactly how did that make you feel, or what were your thoughts in particular for his behavior? What were you thinking in your mind?
Protection. I was thinking this is not the first time that caused a situation like that. And when I meet people like that, I put myself in their shoe, and I understand that when I leave there, they have to live there. So I allow them to take me where they want to take me, and they have the freedom to tell me what they want to tell me without me passing judgment. Because remember, a lot of people say, if that was me, this is what I'll do. People are quick to say that. But until you stand in that person's shoes, and whatever those two have some type of relationship, it's not for me to question that. I'm just there to find out how long it's been happening, what has happened, what do you want to tell me. I always know there's something that he's not telling me, but I also know why he's not telling me. That's where he lives.
Okay.
That's what he gets the resources he gets from right there.
Yeah. Interesting. But when you interview European people, talk to them about these incidents, do you ever feel the sense of racism or do you feel like, you know, so they might be lying to you or anything like that, or feel the sense of racism, or you feel that you might feel that someone might try to retaliate because of the information or because of the question, anything like you have any of those types of feelings? I felt any given time.
Yes, I have. I've been in a place before where if this man's eyes could have killed me, I would be dead. And the way if we was back in the 60s, anywhere in the 60s to the 1800s, he probably would have had me killed or lynched. First of all, you know, because it was all over his face. So I've been in places, you know. But I also know that to do this work and to be brought to this work, you have to be bold, cannot have any fear. You can't be afraid, because Harriet Tubman wasn't afraid. When they told her not to go back, she just went back. She was just wondering if she wasn't afraid. So what could they do to me that hasn't already been done to us? Okay? So if I should die in this work, this was my life. This is what my eulogy should say. This is the work. So I'm not going to entertain fear, because if I entertain fear, I won't go back out there. So I don't think about that. It's just that when I get a call, when I get a lead, when I get something, when I'm on something, I'm on it.
Okay. Understood. In regards to your work, are you inspiring to train and educate the youth, like a youth cadre or whatever, you collect as youth to take on this work he's doing, or to understand his work, or is there something you're interested in doing in general? Or are you already doing it, you know?
If some students may come here and there, but for the most part, you have to want this. Now, students may come and they may be very helpful at building databases, sort of that sort of thing. But when one come, they say, I want to learn everything that you know. I want to stay with you. I want to go where you go. I want to know what you know. I want to see how you do it. I'm going to know when that one comes. And I wait every day for a student to come, you know. Sometimes I feel guilty about passing this on to someone because, you know, you're giving them pain. You know, you're giving them, you're changing their life. You're giving them a lot of pain is the biggest thing I can say. And you're giving them knowledge at the same time. But you have to be strong because, like I said, a lot of this work involves in-depth research that involves beatings, rapes, murder, you know. And then you feel like the ancestors are using you to cross over in a spirit, because it's a spiritual journey too, that I do know. And so I'll allow those that have something to say to use my body, because that's what it is a spirit. And when you learn that, and some people say, oh, that's crazy. Well, it's not for them. It wasn't given to them to see. They couldn't see what Harriet Tubman saw. They couldn't see what Marcus Garvey saw. You know? You see it later, but you don't see it because the vision and the work is given to those it's called to give it, you know, to serve. So when I think about passing this on, the person really have to want it. If they don't want it, you can't wait.
Okay.
If they don't want it,
you can't
pass. Yes.
I have a question. Can you tell me how your work relates to the history of the Conway Elite System? How do your work relate to that in regards to awareness and giving for knowledge?
Yeah, there was a lot of convict leasing where men, poor white men, poor Choctaw Indians, or whomever, when they was charged with trumped-up charges and put in jail, and then they would have some of these people that own these companies come bail them out. Then they had to work, go to prison or work that debt off. And then the chain gang, both on the men and the women, is still associated with that. And the modern-day prison camps right now, slavery, is the prisons, the for-profit prisons. So when you see it, you just see the plantations at a different look. And so there's a big relationship between the 13th Amendment and the for-profit prisons. And I think Michelle Alexander's book summed it up the best. The new Jim Crow.
New Jim Crow. Yes, ma'am. Excellent book. Excellent book.
Excellent
book. I just want you to give like some intel in regards that, you know, a lot of people don't understand Conway Elite System or how it relates to quote unquote modern day slavery, the prison system, the 13 men. They don't understand those particular concepts, right? I just want you to get yourself from a research perspective and a professional perspective. You know, it makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. You know, and I appreciate you for the information. You know, I have another question in regards to what actually motivates you to keep doing this work. You know what I'm saying? How many times have you thought about giving up, or how many times have you actually said, I'm not doing this anymore, or I quit, or even if you had those thoughts, you know?
I never had those thoughts, because it's like anything else, you know, when you think about, when you take an oath to a gang or whatever, you have a hard time getting out of there. You know, if you're a part of the Illuminati, you can't hardly get out of there. Well, that's the same thing here. I couldn't get out if I wanted to get out. So I don't try.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question. You know,
getting it to the end.
That's
what's up. Yeah.
Till I die. That's it, you know. And so, you know, I just believe that when I took that oath, hey, you don't go back on this one now. So it's no quitting. Did Harry tell me quit? No, she didn't quit.
Nah, she kept on rolling.
Our ancestors couldn't quit when they was in that cotton field. They couldn't quit. So quitting is not an option. Keep going on. That's the main thing. You know, and realizing that my time is getting short. And there's still a lot of work to do.
Sure, indeed.
That's it. I make it matter.
Okay. In regards to your activism work, right? You know what I'm saying? What did that entail as an activist? What did that actually mean to you?
It's just to stand up for something that you deeply believe in, and you will not be pushed over, and you will fight with everything that's in you. You stand up for the cause that you are committed to, and that's what it is. You know, they call it being an activist, but to me, it's just standing up and saying that, you know, this is what it is. This is it. And when you take that stand, you face with anything that you have to face, whether that be prison, whether that be jail, whether that be dying, whatever it is, but you believe in a cause and you stand up for that cause. That's it. You just don't quit. You just don't bow down to it. You just don't. It's just, you can't, you know. So when you take a stand, that's just the stand you take.
Yeah, indeed. Would you consider your work to be revolutionary?
To a degree, yes, because it's revolutionary and it's educational. It's all of that in one. So I believe that it is. I know a lot of people wouldn't be sad. They wouldn't be happy with me exposing these things I expose. You know, and some people are saying, oh, that happened a long time ago, but it hurts more when I hear us say that. I don't worry about what we say. Because I always say it like this here. If there was a such thing as to return back to this place, I'd rather be an oak tree. A bird, a butterfly, anything. Because I've never seen so many people so complacent with nothing. You know, it's just something, I don't know what ancestor that is in me that keep on saying, look, tell them to stop dancing for everything. Stop associating music and get some, we don't have to sing it all the time. You know, we don't have to really just pretend it doesn't exist. So we're in a new area, right? The younger people in a new area. And that area is all about everything that means something to them is the social media site. But if you're going to use social media, put something out there that's educating people. You know, not the fights and not the things that tear us down. See, that's the thing that I don't like. Our ancestors came out those cotton fields, tobacco fields, sugar cane, and other plantations, stud plantations. And speaking about the stud plantations, as I'm speaking about that, we know about the sugar cane, the agriculture, but we don't talk about the studs who, in small communities, one man can be the father of 50 children and don't know any of them. And so when you go back to research your family history, you're going to find there was a reason why some of the elders in the family didn't talk about things because it hurt so bad. And this generation said, well, nobody talk about it. Well, they're not lying. Nobody talk about it. The average time you go to someone's house, for those who celebrate holidays, check out what's going on. If it's football season, they're talking about football. The touchdown that somebody else made. You might be able to get 1 minute of a conversation in the household about something that has some good substance to it. The children looking at all of that. So when you see a man that fathered that many children in one area, and some of them might be sisters and brothers or whatever, then you find out that's a messed up gene right there. That might be the reason why they can't comprehend nothing. Those are taboo relationships. That's why a lot of people don't want to do this genealogy research, but it's deep.
Yes, ma'am. If you know, we got a couple of minutes left, right, on your time, a couple of minutes left. What are your final thoughts that you're going to leave us with? If you're going to leave any contact information, website information,
yes.
Whatever, what are your final thoughts you're going to leave it with?
My final thoughts is this. Listen to the elders that's giving advice to you all. Research your own family history. Know yourself. Honor those that came before you. Respect those that live with you. And prepare a better future for those that is yet unborn. Men need to take their rightful places. And women should do the same because we're out of balance right now. We're way out of balance. We can't do what Babylon do. We may live in Babylon, but we can't. Don't come from under her. That's what our ancestors did. Because, like I said, what we see now with the killings in our community, you gotta stop. It has to still be anybody left if we don't. So I would like to say to all everyone that's listening, research your own family history and learn from your own family history and pass that knowledge on to others. I can be reached at AntoinetteHorrell@gmail.com. And I want to thank you so much for having me as a guest on your show as well.
I appreciate it, so man. It was long overdue. You know, we've been at this for a couple of years. That man, you.
yes, it has. It's
been long
overdue. For all the work. And I appreciate you as well. All right.
I appreciate you, sister. So again, I want to thank you for coming to our broadcast here. Now you understand. Thank you for the work that you're doing, the work you're doing in the present, the work you're doing in the future, and And I thank you. I want to thank you for your relentless spirit, your spirit of resistance, your spirit of struggle, your spirit of fight, and your spirit of commitment. You know that to educate the mind and master the other, without worrying about what the consequence is going to be. You're still doing the work, and your devotion and commitment, your heart. I salute you for that, and I'm very appreciative of you and your work, your effort, and your energy. And also, if anyone If anyone had any comrades, social loved ones, or friend behind enemy lines, feel free to look into our website, which is www.georgeuniversity.com. Again, it's www.georgeuniversity.com. Long live resistance, long live your African independent movement. The struggle online for independent, free all new African prisoners of war, new African combatants, new African captured citizens, and we will win the war. Free land and peace.